like I honestly felt like, I mean, this sounds like dramatic, but like, you know, you feel like you're gonna die because nobody is like supporting you.
That's Maria Bullard, a breast cancer patient who lost her access coverage halfway through her course of chemotherapy. I'm Christopher Conover.
And I'm Andrea Kelly. When the Arizona legislature passed the final budget for this fiscal year, there were two options for getting rid of the red ink: raise taxes or make deep cuts. The majority of lawmakers chose the reduction route.
From education to transportation to healthcare, the budget acts fell. And most agreed, as painful as the cutting was, the budget had to be reduced. But the cuts that got the most attention were to Access, Arizona's Medicaid program. The legislature did not mandate how the program should cut its coverage of those below the federal poverty level. It simply told Governor Jan Brewer to cut the Access budget by $500 million. But what about those who lose their coverage? Where do they get care?
A lot of states do not cover that population. Would either have to go to a hospital if it was an emergency, or find some other method of health service, or pay for it themselves.
Those are familiar comments from the governor and many others who support, sometimes begrudgingly, those cuts. On October 1st, tens of thousands of poor Arizona residents will no longer be eligible for Access. The largest group on the coverage chopping block is childless adults. Medicaid is built on state and federal funding, and some of the cuts require approval from Washington. But most cuts don't, because Arizona was already serving a higher percentage of people than mandated by federal law. That's because in the year 2000, Arizona voters approved a state law mandating the increased number of individuals covered by Access. The first move to reduce the cost of Arizona's Medicaid program this year was to stop covering certain organ transplants. But when two people died, the state was able to find the money to restore that program. So now the majority of those being pulled off Access rolls are childless adults, people like 33-year-old Tucson resident Maria Bullard. She signed up for Access in March when she was diagnosed with breast cancer. Maria heard media reports that changes to Access eligibility were coming, so she went to the local Access office to reapply in person, making sure her paperwork went through before the six-month renewal deadline, therefore ensuring her continued coverage.
I first started on Access in March of this year, and they give you 6 months. So my 6 months was up on 8/31. And I follow the procedures to reapply to keep it going, because obviously I'm right in the middle of treatment.
At the time, she was told she probably would be dropped, but she reapplied anyway. In August, Maria got a letter in the mail saying her coverage was terminated. She was halfway through her course of chemotherapy.
It felt like I honestly felt like, I mean, this sounds like dramatic, but like, you know, you feel like you're gonna die, because nobody is like supporting you. And you know, I had this plan laid out, and just because I don't fall under a certain category, which I don't think is fair, and I'm not taking away from the pregnant people and the children, you know, I just don't think it's right that because I don't fall into that category that I don't get to continue to have coverage for something that's life-threatening. I mean, it wasn't even a thought. I was just automatically dropped. And so the stress of that, like, at the time I didn't know if I was going to be able to continue treatment. I can't even describe how that feels to be, like, you know, right in the middle of treatment and being told that I'm not going to have insurance anymore, and not knowing if the cancer center would even take you if you didn't have insurance, or continue to treat me. So I mean, it's been stressful. There's really not a whole lot of words other than devastation, and it just, the whole thing sucks, for lack of a better word.
But Maria found some help from PCAP, the Pima Community Access Program. That's a federal grant-funded service to help uninsured people get primary care and see medical specialists. Michael Goforth is executive director of PCAP, which works as a bridge to ensure people have some health care costs covered as they transition from one plan to another. She says it's not intended to be a long-term insurance plan.
If you can think of it as a Costco or a Sam's Club for medical care, so they have a $40 enrollment fee to buy in as a member to these discounted rates. And what those discounted rates then purchase for them are consults with specialists at contracted specialists at $30, and procedures then at some percentage of the Medicare rate. The purpose of PCAP was to act as a gap coverage, to handle people when they were transitioning between jobs or if they found themselves unemployed. We didn't want to become an insurance type company where people enrolled and stayed with us forever. We do see some pretty high risk cases, however.
That means Maria is not getting free care, but she's not paying full price for her chemotherapy treatment or visits to the oncologist.
It's better than nothing, but that's hopefully can help. I mean, it's helping out a little bit.
PCAP director Goforth says the program works exclusively because doctors agree to participate.
The physicians don't do it really for the money. They do it because they know they're going to see these people anyway. And so it's more of a philosophical community commitment. This is our community. These are residents of our community. And they're going to be using the health care. So let's see what we can do to help. This would not work if it were not for the hospitals and the community physicians and their commitment.
The program is expanding as more people lose their jobs and the enrollment standards for the state's access program are tightened. Goforth says the number of PCAP participants expanded by a third just this year, and it now has close to 8,000 members. So the question is becoming, how much further can the program stretch itself?
That's a question that our board is dealing with now. We're beginning to look, and it really is, and we're staying in close touch with our specialists and the hospitals, because really that question is not more for PCAP to answer, but to our specialists about, you know, what amount of burden can you bear?
Since the program is supposed to be a bridge between healthcare plans, Maria is still hoping to get back on access. She's in the process of appealing her coverage loss.
I just got it in the mail on Saturday, so I just started yesterday on getting it going and waiting for the doctors to give me the notes and making sure, because if you miss one thing on the application, then they don't, you know, look again. They just deny you.
The appeal process is about more than whether or not a patient has children or what kind of treatment she needs.
I check the mail every day for a month, and I finally got a stack of these papers that I need to fill out about, I mean, everything from where I went to school, how many years I went to school, to how much I sit down a day, to how much I drive a week, if I cook, if I clean, if I, like, a whole, like, front and back, several pages of things.
Southern Arizona's Susan G. Komen for The Cure is also feeling firsthand the changes in access eligibility. Maria Elena Acuna is the foundation's community research and grants director. She's the one who gets the phone calls.
I first got a call in July, and they said they received a letter. You know, they weren't going to be put back on access, and they had breast cancer. So because they were diagnosed, we were able to actually start treatment with the treatment dollars through them. And I thought it was really just one person that had just fallen off. But since that day, now I'm up to 28 calls within the last 30 days.
And while every call is unique, they're all too similar.
I just feel the phone calls and I hear their voices, and it's like, what do I do? Where do I go? Please help, because someone just told me I'm not going to get care. And, you know, when you have a stage 4, or stage 3 invasive cancer, having family or not family is the devastation in the voice. My work here, at the end of the day, I go home and it's like, you know, what can you say that's going to be okay to them? You know, and to say, I can, you know, provide this information and give your information and make sure that the state hears it and that. But at the end of the day, we don't say yes to them getting access, and that's hard. And
that stress adds up. Any patient, like Maria Bullard, is already shouldering a blurred world of doctors, treatments, appointments, and bills.
It's been so stressful, and you know, on top of being sick and everything else, that now I have to worry about how I'm going to pay for my treatment, or even if they were going to continue it. But thank God the nice people at the Arizona Cancer Center are, you know, they're not going to stop. And I just said, bill me. It's either that or, I mean, you know, this is my life. I got denied because the paper said because I wasn't pregnant or I didn't have a child. It's been hard. I've lost a lot of sleep. On top of the sleep that I don't get already, it's extremely stressful. I don't even know. It's like I don't know what to do from day to day. I don't know what's going to happen, if they're going to say yes, if they're going to say no. I have to worry about that, about the bills and the medicines that I take, the chemotherapy. I have two surgeries coming up plus radiation, and it's hard. It's stressful.
Jamie Leopold is the executive director of the Southern Arizona Komen Foundation. She says despite the stories she's hearing from cancer patients every day, she understands to some degree the decisions to reduce the number of people covered by access were a balancing act for the state.
Frankly, everyone is actually trying to figure out the solution. And it's caught in the vise of the really volatile healthcare environment. And no one knowing what's going to happen with the Federal Affordable Care Act and how to plan for that. And the state really being caught in a bind on making decisions because access had been a premier program in the country and really hadn't been well acknowledged at the federal level. So now the best case scenario is that by 2014, the federal government will come in and will restore what we've been doing. It's extremely frustrating, and I actually have a lot more feeling for the frustration at the legislature and at the governor's office around the whole thing.
Staff at the Komen Foundation isn't just worried about current cancer patients, but also those who haven't yet been diagnosed.
We know that if we find the cancer early and treat it early, the survival rate is much higher. So treating people, doing the early diagnosis and getting people treatment earlier in the disease process is good for business, good for our communities, and good for our economy. So causing this obvious bottleneck for a young person is incomprehensible.
The importance of diagnostics and treatment aren't just limited to cancer or the urban healthcare puzzle. Jim Dixon, the CEO of Copper Queen Community Hospital in Bisbee, says early detection of any disease is cheaper than end-stage medical care.
We can't stop people who have been smoking all their lives. We can't stop people that are obese and that kind of stuff. Wellness will work, but in my case, the horse is out of the barn. I'm 63 years old. I'm not going to go back to being healthy again. I'm dead. I mean, you know, nobody told me about cholesterol. All right, so that's the problem. But through good disease management, we can reduce the healthcare costs. Case in point, cardiac disease. That's the number one killer in rural Arizona. We have a cardiac telemedicine program, and in just a 6-month area, we saved $500,000 in costs from not shipping people and doing that. We're expanding it now to the clinics so that we can manage the disease of the heart disease and manage it. There are ways we can do this, but the only way we're going to see immediate savings and be able to handle these cuts is to do it wiser and keep people out.
The access or Medicaid cuts have statewide impact, and they're exacerbated in rural areas where communities have fewer health resources and residents tend to earn less than their urban counterparts, making them more likely to be eligible for access. We'll explore those issues after a quick break. Welcome back to our special report on the cuts to healthcare funding for the poor in Arizona. I'm Christopher Conover.
And I'm Andrea Kelly. Healthcare in rural communities is a different kind of challenge than in urban areas. The state's cuts to the Medicaid program, more commonly known as ACCESS, exacerbate already tight budgets at rural hospitals and clinics. Those facilities serve an area often covering thousands of square miles. In the metropolitan Tucson area, there are 8 hospitals and hundreds of doctors, specialists, and clinics. But just 14 hospitals serve all of Arizona's rural residents, from Douglas to Winslow, Kingman to Greer. Jim Dixon is the CEO of the Copper Queen Community Hospital in Bisbee. He says availability of care is a challenge.
With our clinics, we now have a complete range of what I consider primary care. If someone doesn't think a cardiologist isn't primary care, get real, it is. And we have OBGYNs that come out here and do practice because there's no OB program in all of Cochise County except at Sierra Vista. So you have women traveling 100 miles to deliver a baby. And they do have them on the road. We've had 3 or 4 cases of that.
And Dixon says that babies delivered on the way to the hospital will be the least of the problem because unless something changes, some of the rural hospitals will be forced to close their doors.
You're going to see it happen. There's no question in my mind. If you take these economics and you look at them, they're closing down small hospitals. Now, some people say, why do they need small hospitals in these communities? Well, traditionally, Arizona has been founded where mineral deposits are. That's where the towns are. You know, you got Mount Graham, Safford, and you got Bisbee, Douglas. We are all mineral towns. And so the rationale for why the populations are where they are is not because there's transportation. It's not because they're scattered all over the state. And so once you lose that, you can have a clinic, but a clinic's not going to treat you for an emergency room. And that's the big thing. You know, the emergency room becomes the necessary entry into the system.
Adding to the isolated nature of rural areas are changes to insurance plans, access coverage, and the federal requirements as part of the Affordable Care Act, known to opponents as Obamacare.
That's the other problem. We have a lot of doctors that are starting to drop stuff like access, Medicaid, and Medicare. So even if you have some doctors, they don't take the thing. And I know when these insurance changes come in, they're going to offer lowball reimbursement. And the doctors are going to say, I don't want to do that. We have 2 urologists, only one takes Medicaid. We at one time had no dermatologist who would take access. They wanted us to ship people to Phoenix to see a dermatologist. And that's why we started our telemedicine, our dermatology telemedicine program, because in Arizona on a mountain, you've got a lot of skin cancer. And the sooner you catch it, the better. So we've used the telemedicine to obviate some of these problems, but if they don't pay for all these services, like the insurance companies, right now Medicaid and Medicare will pay for telemedicine. UHC, Blue Cross Blue Shield, and Cigna will not, even though UHC gave us a grant of $150,000 to implement our program. So it's just not rational.
Dixon says when access cuts back and people still get sick, the hospitals are left to cover the costs of care.
They're virtually shutting down the rural health care delivery system that we've had for over 100 years. And they'll implode, and it will decrease the access to health care.
The increase in costs to hospitals when they care for uninsured patients adds up fast. Dixon's Copper Queen Hospital in Bisbee could find itself covering more than $1.2 million in what he calls charity care. That's covering people who simply can't pay for their treatment and have no health insurance to help.
So we're seeing massive increases in our uninsured in charity care. We went up $100,000 from this month last year to this month this year to last year. And so we're talking about another million or two. That is not figured into these figures.
It sounds dramatic because it is. In Nogales, Holy Cross Hospital is expecting to lose more than $1.5 million to treating patients who used to have coverage but no longer do and can't afford to pay their health care bills. Add to all the other cuts the fact that the state now pays less for the services still covered by access than it did a year ago, and Nogales could be facing a $9 million deficit. With high poverty rates in rural areas, Jim Dixon says those hospitals see more patients on access.
If you look, the percentage for Holy Cross in hospital in Nogales 46% access. And you'll see Douglas Hospital, I think it's under CMAC here, Southeastern Arizona. See their deficit? 47% access. So the access is not even paying the cost of doing the business. So the more you get, the deeper in debt you go. But this kind of stuff is just insane. There is no way that any hospital that is a $20 million business, which is about the size of a small hospital, can sustain a $9 million deficit. That's what you're talking about.
Rural hospitals have had trouble getting state and federal officials to pay attention to this crisis. They've tried to get a plan to help with the funding through the legislature without luck. Dixon says there's been no help from federal elected officials that he's approached either. He's taken up lobbying for rural health centers throughout the state. The hospitals have now come up with their own solution. They will donate, Dixon says, $2 per patient to a pool that they can then use to help offset the loss of Medicaid funding. Each hospital will contribute and get reimbursed for treatment from the same fund to cover care for uninsured patients.
Now, we probably won't need the legislature's approval. The governor can sign this because it's in the access program. But if we have to go through the legislature, we're into a different situation altogether. Now, the letter I'm giving you is a pool that we've designed. We hope that it will go through. It is a donor pool. It means that nobody's taxed because you couldn't get an assessment tax through the state legislature right now if your life depended on it.
Dixon says he knows the proposal is risky.
Once you start this tax stuff or this donation stuff, you start into the slippery slope. And right now, I could care less. My problem is to maintain the healthcare system in Southern Arizona. My first alliance is to Copper Queen and its patients. My second is to this region. My third is to the state. And I'm on the board of the Arizona Hospital Association. I'm a former president of the Arizona Rural Healthcare Association. I've got all those connections, and I work them as best I can. But this is something really hard.
If rural hospitals do get their plan approved, they'll have a better shot at staying open. But they still have another problem, recruiting doctors.
Now it's almost like pulling teeth because, of course, Arizona's a war zone. People are being shot every place they go, you know, and immigrants are lighting the fires. It is the worst PR Arizona has ever had. I mean, we were the number one growing state in the union, and now we're looking like a war zone with criminal crime and that stuff. So it's been very hard to recruit healthcare professionals.
Patients who have already lost their access coverage or in the coming weeks and months could lose their coverage are looking to others for help. One of the options is fighting those cuts in court. The Arizona Center for Law in the Public Interest sued the state earlier this year to block the access enrollment freeze. Tim Hogan is an attorney for the center and says the cuts are illegal because they violate the will of the voters.
The problem is that Arizona voters passed an initiative in 2000 requiring access to provide benefits to all individuals at or below 100% of the federal poverty level. And so this action to eliminate or freeze the population of adults without dependent children explicitly violates that voter-approved mandate from 11 years ago now. The mandate, the initiative, said that the funding for covering this population, and others actually, would come from the Tobacco Settlement Fund, but if that wasn't enough, that the legislature was required to supplement those funds from other available sources, including legislative appropriations and federal funds. So the nature of the lawsuit is that the governor and the legislature are violating Proposition 204 and the Voter Protection Act, which prohibits the legislature from repealing or amending any voter-approved initiative.
Lawyers for the state defend the cuts, saying the program is only available when there's enough money to pay for it. The Center for Law in the Public Interest represents the plaintiffs, which include adults who are on access or who have been denied coverage because they don't have children. A Maricopa County judge ruled that the voters can't require the legislature to spend money on a particular program. The case is now at the Arizona Court of Appeals, which is scheduled to hear arguments in the coming weeks. Hogan says he'd like the state to return to the previous coverage standards.
Resolution would be that the state abides by the law passed by Arizona voters and provides health coverage to all individuals at or below 100% of the federal poverty level.
Even though the changes to access were made by the legislature and governor to save money, they actually ended up costing the state. When Arizona decided to freeze enrollment and change who was covered by access, the federal government pulled some of its matching dollars. At the time, Governor Jan Brewer said she knew that was going to happen, but based on Arizona's budget situation, she had no choice.
I know that our budget was balanced. I know that I've been working with the Secretary of Health, Secretary Sebelius, and that the federal dollars are indeed, some of it is going to be lost by what we are doing.
As patients and healthcare providers wait to find out whether the cuts will hold up in court, they're focusing on what they can do. Copper Queen Community Hospital's Jim Dixon says no matter the financial strain, the hospital will keep serving Bisbee.
Well, we keep the doors open, except we won't have the services. We won't be able to afford the physicians. We won't be able to afford the new equipment and that we need to diagnose and that. We will succeed. There's others that won't. And they mean as much to those small towns as this hospital means to this town.
That positive attitude is the one common thread between rural hospitals facing funding crises and patients like Maria Bullard, who have lost their access amid cancer treatment.
I have 7 more weeks of, I had 27, I go every week, and so I have 7 more weeks still. And then I get a month break, and then I have surgery, and then I get a few weeks off to heal, and then I have 6 weeks of radiation every day. The tumors are shrinking and all that, the good thing, so I want them to continue to shrink, so I'd like to stay on, you know, my treatment, so it would be nice to have some help.
To find additional resources, other healthcare options, or get contact information for access and the state's health department, visit our website at azpm.org, where you can also hear this story again. Mark Dugan provided production help. Michael Chihok was our editor, and Peter Michaels is the news director. For Arizona Public Media, I'm Andrea Kelly.
And I'm Christopher Conover. Thanks for listening.